This is Dan Barish, the Jewish liberal from Cleveland.
And this is Matt Shepard, the Mormon conservative from Seattle.
And we are the common ground. So today, you know, our country's been going through some struggles, first with Ferguson, and then more recently even with the Cleveland police killing of 12-year-old Tamir Rice in Goodell Park on the west side. But that's only... those are only the latest two incidents in a, you know, what, 400-plus year history with race in America. That's very problematic. And so we are going to grab the third rail of American society and talk about it, because we're just that stupid.
Yeah, you know, it's a highly controversial subject, but we're going to delve into it. So I've got a couple things. You wanted to start with Bacon's Rebellion. I had something that was a little bit earlier than that, actually.
Well, from the perspective of some historians, Bacon's Rebellion is really, it's not the beginning of a history of race relations in America, because you had slaves being brought over here before then, I believe, although I am ham-fisted enough that I don't have the year in front of me. But in 1676, there is a rebellion by frontiers people against the governor of Virginia, William Berkeley. And what's terrifying to the ruling elites about Nathaniel Bacon's Rebellion is that it's actually an alliance of poor whites with Africans. And so from the perspective of the ruling elites, it's like, uh-oh, the jig is up. All of the people we've oppressed have realized that they have a mutual enemy, and they're up in arms against us. And so they responded to this, the authorities did, by hardening the racial caste system of America, the nascent, well, you know, the colonies. And so
And as an example of some of the issues before that, there was the first slave ship landed in 1617 in Jamestown and delivered slaves there. There was a slave ship that landed, maybe it was 1619. Anyway, early 1600s is the timeline here. There was the second slave ship that landed in Massachusetts a little while after the Pilgrims landed. The Pilgrims actually freed the slaves and imprisoned the slaveholders. Like, you know, they're like, no, we're not having slavery here. There were other instances where there were slaves, especially in the Bay Colony, but the Plymouth Colony tended to have more of the Puritan attitudes of, you know, no man holding each other, no man owning each other, and things of that nature.
Well, right, the Massachusetts Bay Colony was founded on Puritan beliefs, and the Virginia Colony was pure, unadulterated capitalism. In its nascent form, anyway. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, I mean, that's an interesting thing. Just, you know, there's been a lot of animus against, like, the Pilgrims and things of that nature. You know, it didn't start with them, so don't go back to them. Don't taint their memory. They were good people. Were they perfect? No. But, you know, they were good people and believed in, you know, in equality of man and that sort of thing, so... anyway, so, you know, that kind of sets off a tone, which I think comes to a head probably in the Civil War. There's a few other, you know, big clashes between the racial issues, with a couple different potential ideas in the North and in the South as to things about slavery and oppression of classes and that sort of thing. And a lot of this comes from the old European note, which was that you had a lord and there was a feudal caste system, which Europe has been slowly dismantling, probably starting with the Magna Carta, but that they've been slowly dismantling that over the last 700 years.
Well, the Magna Carta was America kind of inherited the rights of nobles against King John. It didn't say anything about the
peasants. Yes, but it doesn't say anything about the peasants, but the nobles were being oppressed, and so they fought back. And so that's kind of the first wave back against the accumulation of power under one source.
Right.
Before that, it was kind of driving towards more and more power as you got towards the top, where this, like, it started to spread the power back out amongst the people, I think is when it, it's definitely is not, it was just the very start of that turnaround that's been very slow and happening and is still going on. And there's been waves back in either direction for a long time. But, you know, and here in America, there are definitely some of those key moments, I think. One was the forced compromise at the time of the Constitution and things of that nature. And at the Continental Congress, where in order to keep the South, where they had a lot of slavery and that sort of thing, but to also weaken their power, they introduced the Three-Fifths Clause, which was actually while it was a compromise, it was also a slight dig at the South, because it took away some of their power, some of their voting power to in the House.
Well, what the South wanted was they wanted to have their cake and eat it too. They wanted they wanted their slaves to count for voting seats in the House, but they definitely didn't want their slaves to be able to vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the Three-Fifths Compromise meant that the South could partly have their cake and eat it too.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, rather than split up the country, which, you know, would have been, one, a death toll at the time for the country itself, at least of the South portion, and the North portion, because they, in a lot of ways, they needed each other. Because the South was, in a lot of ways, produced a lot of the raw materials, and the North processed a lot of those raw materials. And that's right. Where, you know, it kind of, you know, became a love-hate relationship, and they were able to maintain things. And, you know, I think because they stayed together, have been able to be a beacon to the world of freedom, even though we have failed. You know, we have been a beacon of freedom to the world. If you might not notice, we're doing better now than, say, I don't know, Mauritania, which just repealed slavery, like, in law a few years ago.
We are, in fact, in better shape in Mauritania, remarkably enough, yes.
Mm-hmm. And in a lot of cases, it's, you know, there's a lot of places where we're in better shape than a lot of the world on race and class issues and that sort of thing, because we have been a beacon of freedom. And because we've had a moral structure, but also a governmental structure, which, you know, again, not perfectly implemented, but one that is designed and towards giving people freedom and attempted to give freedom to all men and women.
Well, did that happen right away? No. Let me jump in as the liberal and gently say that that's true to an extent, but liberals find that to be also a Pollyanna gloss on a deeply problematic history in which black people are simply less valued than white people. And there's a very long history of the government killing black people with impunity, and citizens killing black people with impunity. And black people, as far as I can tell, simply don't feel nearly as safe in the United States of America, nor as free, nor as successful as do whites.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm speaking as a white guy. That's my sense of it. If in a mm-hmm. perfect world, I don't know what we'd have in a perfect world. I'm not stupid enough to say, oh, we could make this better if we had a black guest, because I can tell you as a Jew, it's so annoying if someone says, oh, represent the Jewish people in this conversation. No, you can't. Stop it. So to me, saying, oh, let's
no,
have a black
that's representing a group of, you know, yep, by exactly. Putting us into groups of people, it's saying that I represent their point of view. No. I mean, you know, we say that we're conservative and liberal, but I by no means represent all conservatives, and Dan does not represent all liberals.
Yes, I do.
This is a conservative and a liberal trying to come to consensus and hoping that you gain some enlightenment in that
right.
process.
Right. So what I did want to introduce was, a lot of liberals are familiar with this list, but a scholar named Peggy McIntosh put together an article called White Privilege, Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack. And the idea of privilege, white privilege, is that there's this sort of invisible knapsack full of all the kinds of privilege that you have because you're white and aren't even terribly aware of it. And so these were some of the advantages that she sort of worked on and figured out that she sort of had. And I'm going to run through this as a checklist for both of us, and we can both just say yes or no, or, you know, ambivalence if that's, or ambiguous answer if that's necessary. And okay. it's 50 items, so hang on, listeners, but I thought it might be interesting for our listeners. So here we go without further ado. Number one, I can, if I wish, arrange to be in the company of people of my race most of the time. Matt, what's your answer on that?
Not really, I can't, no.
I would say in my personal life it's true. I would say in my professional life, it's absolutely not true, because I'm a social worker in the Cuyahoga County Jail, and a substantial number of inmates are not white.
Mm-hmm.
There's a substantial
number of people at my work that are also not white, but there's also, you know, anyway, continue. My neighbors are, like, I have, you know, black Muslim neighbors, and a number of things. There's an interracial couple that lives just below me.
And my downstairs neighbor is an African American, so, yes. Number two. I can avoid spending time with people whom I was trained to mistrust and who have learned to mistrust my kind or me.
I can avoid them? Is that what the question was?
Yes, the ability to. I can avoid spending time with these people whom I was trained to mistrust and who have learned to mistrust my kind or me.
I don't recall being trained to mistrust anybody, so I call moot point on that question.
I'm not sure I was explicitly trained to mistrust anybody. I could say that the media sort of did it. And I would say I can't avoid it. Three.
If I was forced to say that I was, I would say probably can't avoid it either. So.
Right. Three. If I should need to move, I can be pretty sure of renting or purchasing housing in an area which I can afford and in which I would want to live.
Yeah, sure, probably.
Likewise. Four. I can be pretty sure that my neighbors in such a location will be neutral or pleasant to me.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And it's funny for me, my downstairs neighbor is pretty pleasant. My next door neighbors are frat boys and they're extremely annoying, but not dangerous.
But do they hate you?
No, I don't think that they care about my existence, which is more of a problem.
So they're, which is neutral, so.
Okay, fair enough, but they keep me up at night sometimes. Anyway, big whoop. Five, I can go shopping alone most of the time, pretty well assured that I will not be followed or harassed.
True.
True, yes. For me as well. Mm-hmm. Six, I can turn on the television or open to the front page of the paper and see people of my race widely represented.
True, I guess.
True as well. Seven, when I am told...
I don't really turn on the news. I don't watch the news or read the newspaper, so...
Yeah, I get my news online, like I think most of our generation maybe does. Seven, when I am told about our national heritage or about, quote, civilization, unquote, I am shown that people of my color made it what it is.
I guess, yeah, I guess. I haven't really thought about it too much.
I would say so for me, yes. Although, I mean, more so for the fact that I'm white than that I'm Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I would say Judaism is not a color, so never mind. Eight, I can be sure that my children will be given curricular materials that testify to the existence of their race.
Are there people that don't have their race, that say their race doesn't exist?
Not doesn't exist, but... doesn't talk about it nearly as much, I would say, is what she's sort of getting at there, I would have to imagine.
Okay, I guess the question's badly worded.
Could be. You'd have to ask Peggy McIntosh what she meant. I'm just guessing. I never met her.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's... Anyway.
Right. Mm-hmm. Nine. And this is going to be silly for both of us because we aren't professors, but if I want to, I can be pretty sure of finding a publisher for this piece on white privilege. Now, I don't think I could get anything published, period, but that's just me.
Yeah, I could publish stuff on the internet, which is one of the beauties of the internet, is that it's...
That's true, and you can now self-publish on Amazon. That's true, too.
Uh-huh, yeah. So, you know, so yes, I could find it. If I wanted to publish something, I can publish something.
Okay, so things have changed because technology. Anyway, mm-hmm. 10. I can be pretty sure of having my voice heard in a group in which I am the only member of my race.
I guess. Sure. We'll go with yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. Likewise. Mm-hmm. Okay. I can be casual about whether or not to listen to another person's voice in a group in which she or he is the only member of his or her race.
I don't understand the point of what this question is.
I think she is talking about, can you casually disregard someone else's input in a conversation because they happen to be whatever race that they happen to be?
No.
And I certainly, growing up, was taught that's rude and you don't do that no matter who it is.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's, you know, what I was taught is you, when someone else is talking, you shut up and listen.
Exactly.
Sometimes I don't do that because, you know, I think my ideas are better, but that doesn't matter whether they're black or white or Asian or whatever. It's, you know.
Right. Well, as Forrest Gump once said, stupid is as stupid does. So, you know, stupidity is evenly distributed across the population, I tend to guess.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
12. I can go into a music shop and count on finding the music of my race represented. into a supermarket and find the staple of foods which fit my cultural traditions, into a hairdresser's shop and find someone who can cut my hair.
Well, kind of funny, like, almost all the haircutter people here in Seattle are Asian.
Huh.
So, like, it's kind of interesting. The Seattle area is the biggest minority isn't like African Americans. It's Asians. In my area, it's especially Korean, but there's also Chinese, a little bit of Japanese. But yeah, you know, this area is especially heavily Korean. And so I mean, I talk to the person and they cut my hair. I mean, yeah, sure, I guess.
Okay, 13.
So a lot of that has some more. You know, if I lived in New Jersey and going into a shop to get my hair cut, there were definitely some people that would have had a different issue with my hair than they normally would have been dealing with.
I would say yes for all of these items, although staple foods which fit with my cultural traditions is a bit weirder for me, just because, well, I don't keep kosher, but if I really kept very seriously kosher, I could have a hard time almost anywhere but a Jewish business, especially yeah. with the meats. But but never mind that, because I don't care about keeping kosher. So to me, that's a moot point.
Yeah, and I mean, here there's a lot of Mormon culture. We don't drink, we don't smoke, don't drink coffee, and in a lot of places, that's half the grocery store. So kind of interesting. I just kind of shuttled past that area of the grocery store.
Right, and I never really drink hardly at all, and I've never touched a cigarette in my life. So in this way, my lifestyle is sort of, you know, just like a Mormon, but I'm not a Mormon. Oh, and I will have a drink now and then, but I just, not, I probably average one completed drink a year. That'd be my guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're 13. On, what, 15?
This is 13. Okay. 13. Whether I use checks, credit cards, or cash, I can count on my skin color not to work against the appearance of financial reliability.
I guess. I never really use checks, so the other things are automatically checked, so.
Right, right. But, and yes, for me, I can feel that the cashier won't look at me and say, well, he's a white guy. I bet he's not good for that money. That's never happened to me. 14.
If you look specifically at, anyway, continue.
14. I can arrange to protect my children most of the time from people who might not like them.
True.
Well, my child is unborn, so that's super easy right now.
Just make sure that Anne's protected and you're good.
Yes, exactly, and she seems to be pretty safe. As for once he is born, you know, there is unfortunately rising anti-Semitism in Europe. There's even crowds chanting to gas the Jews. But in the United States, this does not appear to be happening, so I feel pretty good right now.
Yeah. There's an interesting thing that there are a couple of missionaries when I was living in New Jersey. Have you ever heard of the Hebrew Israelites?
Yes, but you told me about them some time ago.
So basically, they believe that all black people are the tribe of Judah. Like, the African Americans are the tribe of Judah, and all black people are the tribe of, are Israel. And, like, literally their quotes say, you know, this is the tribe of Dan, is, like, the people that live in Zimbabwe or whatever, and like per the King James Version of the Bible, which does not say that at all. But anyway, they have a huge animus against white people. So like, if you go anywhere near a Hebrew Israelite temple as a white person, you will get chased out. And there are a couple of missionaries who were walking past, like white guys in that area, didn't realize where they were, and got chased out with an axe.
Wow, an axe.
Uh huh.
Wow.
So I mean, you know, yeah.
Okay. But that's a highly exceptional situation. Basically, white people don't have to worry about that sort of thing. Although,
yeah,
anyway.
I've spent a decent amount of time in, like, some of the more, I'd say, anti-white areas, where, you know, you can walk for, like, you know, for like 10 minutes and not see a white person in some of these areas that I've gone into, and, you know, trying to teach people. I mean, and I'm a missionary, so I do have a little bit of more of the immunity than a normal person. But, you know, I think a lot of it was just, you know, we were able to talk to them the way that talk to people in the way that they wanted to be talked to. And when you do that in general, there isn't an animus. If you connect with people, then I think this is part of at least my consensus, I think, with you, Dan, is that when you connect with people, that racial tendencies tend to fall away.
Well, I would say I don't know that race falls away. I don't think that it ever necessarily falls away until we have a more perfect world. What I would say is that we stop being as afraid of each other, or maybe as resentful of each other, maybe hopefully, and we begin to have honest, earnest conversations as human beings instead of as caricatures of what we think the other person thinks or is, or any of those things. Uh-huh. The human level takes over. So,
just like us. I mean, there's a lot of animus between conservatives and liberals based on ideas and that sort of thing. But we get along well. Why? Because we've connected with each other on a person-to-person level.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that is ultimately what is going to defeat or make race such a small issue that it's not a big deal anymore, is when we connect together as people and realize, hey, this person really is a lot like me. There are a lot of things that we can connect on. Do we agree on everything? Are we the exact same thing? No, that's why we're different people. And that's it stretches you. And so I encourage our listeners, get to know somebody who thinks differently, whether that's based on race or based on ideologically concerns, or reach out to somebody that thinks differently than you and try to understand how they think and the way that they're and try to understand and get to know them as a person and the content of their character. And you will often be surprised by, your own thoughts and, the things that you can overcome.
Right. So, number 15, and this is sort of like number 14. I do not have to educate my children to be aware of systemic racism for their own daily physical protection.
In where I live right now, no.
And nor will I don't think. 16, I can be pretty sure that my children's teachers and employers will tolerate them if they fit school and workplace norms. My chief worries about them do not concern others' attitudes toward their race.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. Likewise, once he's born. 17. I can talk with my mouth full and not have people put this down to my color.
What?
Or in other words, if you have poor table manners, will people say, oh, Matt's really rude? Or, dude, look at that white guy eating with his mouth full. Are they going to say Matt's rude, or is it the white guy that's being rude? How is that going to be taken? Man, these white people just can't eat politely.
Depends on who I'm with.
I'm sorry?
It depends on who I'm with.
I suppose. I would expect to have it taken as, wow, where are Dan's table manners? 18. I can swear or dress in secondhand clothes or not answer letters without having people attribute these choices to the bad morals, the poverty, or the illiteracy of my race.
Well, I don't swear, ever, so that's kind of a...
You're a special case, you're Mormon.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And in fact, and isn't the fact that you don't engage in profanity because you're Mormon?
If I wasn't Mormon, I probably would swear, so yes, I would say
exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. It's a relatively unique morality particular to Mormons. Not just Mormons, there's other religious groups that are very anti-profanity. Right, so you're a special case. As for me, if I engaged in any of those behaviors, it would be, Dan's swearing, or Dan's using ratty clothes, and etc. Well, geez, Dan's kind of rude. That's how that would be taken.
Mm-hmm.
19. I can speak in public to a powerful male group without putting my race on trial.
Sure, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. 20. I can do well in a challenge, and the answer for me is yes on 19 as well, by the way. 20. I can do well in a challenging situation without being called a credit to my race.
I don't think I've ever heard that ever being said by anybody that wasn't like in a first-hand situation.
But, such and such, I was the first black person to do blah, blah, blah. Random example. 21. Oh, and the answer for me is yes, of course. I would not be called a credit to my race. 21. I am never asked to speak for all the people of my racial group.
I have been.
Okay. I haven't ever been asked to speak for all white people, but on occasion I've been asked to speak for all Jews, which I find silly and impossible.
Yep. 22. And I've also been asked to speak on behalf of Mormons.
Sure. And back in high school, at least I saw you get harassed as a Mormon fairly often, and that annoyed me, at the least.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting. We're both racially not minorities, but, actually in high school we technically were.
By, 1%, but yes.
Yes, it was very, very close. But, we were, but we're both, a minority, cultural group.
Right.
Which is rather interesting.
Right, and about both of our groups, people hold these really weird ideas, some of which are true, and some of which are not true.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that's a lot the same with other cultural and racial groups as well.
Mm-hmm. 20.
So even though we're white people, we still do have a unique perspective.
Right. 22. I can remain oblivious of the language and customs of persons of color who constitute the world's majority without feeling in my culture any penalty for such oblivion.
No.
It depends where I am.
So the world's majority, that's... The world's majority would be, I guess if you're going by continent, would be Asian.
Right. It depends who I'm with. So, certain people I could be with wouldn't think anything of it if I didn't know anything about Asia, and other people wouldn't say, wow, Dan, you're an idiot. Why do I know you? 23. I can criticize our government and talk about how much I fear its policies and behavior without being seen as a cultural outsider.
Again, I think that depends on who I'm around.
Likewise, if I'm talking about United States government policies toward Israel, and if I'm talking to a Jewish group, I better watch it.
Mm-hmm.
24. I can be pretty sure that if I ask to talk to the quote-unquote person in charge, I will be facing a person of my race.
Yeah, I guess.
Likewise. 25. If a traffic cop pulls me over, or if the IRS audits my tax return, I can be sure I haven't been singled out because of my race.
Yeah, I guess.
Likewise.
Have you ever been audited, Dan?
Nope.
It sucks.
Oh, yeah?
You know, basically, I put a number in a wrong box and we ended up audited, so...
Ouch.
Yeah, so, yeah, it wasn't, like, insanely horrible, but it's not fun.
I am 26. I can easily buy posters, postcards, picture books, greeting cards, dolls, toys, and children's magazines featuring people of my race.
Yes.
Likewise.
You know, kind of interesting, you know, one of my daughter's favorite toys is her Tiana doll. Well, she has two, actually. She has her big Tiana, which is maybe a half inch taller than the little Tiana. But I found it kind of sad, and I think that's part of why we got it, was that it was the last, like, here, you know, again, this is Seattle, so you have to understand there's almost no black people here. It's very rare to see a black person. But there's lots of you know, Koreans and things of that nature. But, like, in our Walmart, you know, the black doll, because, you know, people tend to choose a doll that matches their daughter, like, whether it's, you know, brown hair versus blonde or, you know, whatever, that kind of thing. The black doll is usually the last one on the shelves, and it ends up going on clearance, and I find it kind of sad. Partly because we live in Seattle, and there's, like, I think it's close to 1% of the population.
Right. 27. I can go home from most meetings of organizations I belong to feeling somewhat tied in, rather than isolated, out of place, outnumbered, unheard, held at a distance, or feared.
That's a long list. No, I don't think. I think that's not necessarily true for me.
Okay. It's true for me, I think. 28. I can be pretty sure that an argument with a colleague of another race is more likely to jeopardize his or her chances for advancement than to jeopardize mine.
I've never seen that as an issue, or anything of that nature, so...
And I would say that in my own career, I feel that people deal with me fairly, so that if I got into an argument with somebody of a different race or culture or whatnot, the situation would be taken on its merits and not on anyone's attributes.
I think I would agree with that, yeah.
29. I can be pretty sure that if I argue for the promotion of a person of another race or a program centering on race, this is not likely to cost me heavily within my present setting, even if my colleagues disagree with me.
I don't know. There's never been a big issue that I've known about race with any of my colleague areas.
I really haven't had a problem there either. 30. If I declare there is a racial issue at hand, or there isn't a racial issue at hand, my race will lend me more credibility for either position than a person of color will have.
I'd say that's false.
Me too, for me. 31. If I can choose to ignore developments in minority writing and minority activist programs or disparage them, I can choose to, or learn from them, but in any case, I can find ways to be more or less protected from negative consequences of any of these choices.
False.
False for me. I'm a social worker, so if I'm unaware of what minorities are doing, that makes me a crappy social worker. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. would I be disciplined, you know, professionally? Maybe not. But would it make me a distinctly inferior social worker to not keep abreast of such things? Yes, it would. I'd be remiss. Mm-hmm. 32. My culture gives me little fear about ignoring the perspectives and powers of people of other races.
I guess it depends on what you're referring to.
I'm not sure what she really meant here.
I'm not sure what she meant there either.
I mean, I can guess, but I feel like I'd be clumsily guessing.
Mm-hmm.
33. I am not made acutely aware that my shape, bearing, or body odor will be taken as a reflection on my race.
The shape, bearing, and body odor. No, I think I have been. There have been times like, where like I was at a dance or something like that and actually able to move. And so I've been, called a white guy that can dance, kind of thing.
For me, I've never been such an issue. Okay, 34. I can worry about racism without being seen as self-interested or self-seeking.
False.
It just depends on the context for me. 35. I can take a job with an affirmative action employer without having my coworkers on the job suspect that I got it because of my race.
True, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 36. If my day, week, or year is going badly, I need not ask of each negative episode or situation whether it had racial overtones.
Yeah, I don't really want to ask myself whether something had racial overtones all the time.
Right, no, I wouldn't say that any negative incidents in my life ever had racial overtones. 37. I can be pretty sure of finding people who would be willing to talk with me and advise me about my next steps professionally.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Right. 38, me too. 38, I can think over many options, social, political, imaginative, or professional, without asking whether a person of my race would be accepted or allowed to do what I want to do.
I think this is a probably a moot point, seeing how, I mean, we talked about, we have, I don't think that there's any glass ceiling anymore, especially since we've had a black president, we've had pretty much in almost anything except for, I guess, maybe some leadership positions in, like, the Senate or something that have all been filled by people of any color, which way or not, which way, like, so.
Well,
And a lot of that has to do with seniority, so,
There is definitely a glass ceiling, actually. There's
how high is this glass ceiling? It must be,
No, I mean, I'm looking at, for example,
maybe between the Earth and the Moon, but as soon as Virgin Galactic gets past
This is the post-racial mistake America has made. Just because Barack Obama's the president doesn't mean these problems are over. It just means we have a black president.
No, I'm not saying it's over. The glass ceiling implies that there's a certain height that can be reached, and you can't actually you can't see it, but you can't actually get through that barrier. Whereas, where do you set that barrier? Like, is it as a CEO of a Fortune 500 company? I'm pretty sure there have been some CEOs that have been different races.
Well, I would say it's not an impenetrable glass ceiling, but it's a tough barrier to get through. Right now,
so maybe it's
what I'm seeing right now is
in it or something.
What I'm seeing right now is that for example, let's talk about black CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. There are 6 of them, so that's 1.2%.
And then you look at NFL players, and black players are what, like 60-70%?
Well, that's entirely different.
Well, I mean, no, I'm just saying that a lot of this has to do more with cultural ideals than it has to do with racial ideals. Backwoods Appalachian Mountain CEOs do we, like, Fortune 500 CEOs do we have?
Oh, that's a deeply impoverished area, so they're highly unlikely to rise into that kind of leadership.
Uh-huh, exactly. A lot of that has to do more with culture than it has to do with your color.
Well, but that gets into the fact that, at least from a liberal perspective, the race divide is actually a class divide.
Which I think I would agree with you, yes.
And that if you don't get opportunities because your community is not invested in, then you're not going to get the education you need to really rise up in the world most of the time, unless you're a very extraordinary person who can really truly be self-made. And most people are not that good.
Like Ben Carson's mother. Do you know about this?
I get the idea that liberals don't like Ben Carson very much, but I confess I don't know him too well.
He grew up in Detroit. His mother was illiterate and was a single mother of a single mother illiterate. But she kind of decided to turn her life around, partially through coming to God. But she decided, she's like, look, I can't have my boys end up like a lot of the people that are in the neighborhood, like the drug dealers and a lot of those other things that were going on in her neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so she, on the side, like, she had her boys read a book a week and then give her a book report. She could not read the book reports because she couldn't read. But she would mark them up as if she could.
Wow.
And then, you know, and so instilled in them, like, he didn't find out that she couldn't read until he was much older. And so she, like, instilled that in her boys. And now, you know, Ben Carson became one of the most celebrated doctors in America. I mean, in the world, really, by being the, he was the first doctor to separate twins that were conjoined at the head, I think at the brain sac level, through some innovative techniques and a lot of guts, basically. And he was able to rise from absolute poverty because of, you know, his mother, who made a, you know, tough decision and came around and was able to turn her boy's life around.
So anyhow,
you know, so I mean, anyway, I mean, this is, you know, you can rise through this, but I think a lot of it has to do with class and culture, much more so than it has to do with race.
But it's also how you get treated when you even walk in the door, Matt. That's what we liberal steel conservatives can't or won't see. It's
I choose not to see it because I want to judge men by the content of their character, not by the...
No, but the problem with that is it doesn't work. See, there's the actually, let's finish the white privilege thing. Let's get. We have about 12 items left. Let's finish that so we don't lose that thread. Do you mind if we do that?
Sure. Yep.
Okay. 39. I can be late to a meeting without having the lateness reflect on my race.
Yeah, I think that's pretty true.
Mm-hmm. Although I'm so neurotically punctual, I can't imagine being late to anything. 40. I can choose public accommodation without fearing the people of my race cannot get in or will be mistreated in the places I have chosen.
False.
Yeah?
Yeah.
There's no place I have to worry about white people around here that I would go to anyway.
Yeah, I definitely, on my mission, there were places that that was issues.
Okay. 41. I can be sure that if I need legal or medical help, my race will not work against me.
True.
Mm-hmm. Likewise. 42. I can arrange my activities so that I will never have to experience feelings of rejection owing to my race.
I guess that depends on the context.
And likewise for me. I might be, you know... When I'm working, I might be accused of something, but I really deliver the same sort of service to people regardless of race or sex or whatever other circumstance.
Hmm.
43. If I have low credibility as a leader, I can be sure that my race is not the problem.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. 44. I can easily find academic courses and institutions which give attention only to people of my race.
False.
I think I could do it. 45. I can expect figurative language and imagery in all of the arts to testify to experiences of my race.
False, I guess.
I think I could find things in all the arts to be about white people.
Well, if I was trying to, I guess I could probably do it, but I mean, I don't avoid it.
When
I'm listening, the first thing I think isn't like, hey, is this person a white person or a black person? When I'm listening to a song or watching like a movie or something like that. I mean, you really could watch movies where there were no black people in it or no Asian people in your movies?
As in, could I find such a movie? Yes, I'm sure if I worked hard enough, I could find such a movie.
Yeah, but that's as your primary source of consumption. Like, in today's world, no. I definitely can't.
Okay. 46. I can choose blemish cover or bandages and flesh color and have them more or less match my skin.
I guess it depends on where it is in my body.
Okay. I suppose the answer is yes for me. I've never really tried, though. 47. I can travel alone or with my spouse without expecting embarrassment or hostility in those who deal with us.
As a parent, no, I can't.
You mean with your children, or what do you mean?
Well, with my children, yeah.
Oh, because people get embarrassed around children or hostile to their behavior and that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, sure. I get that.
And/or the fact that continue.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't expect problems, but of course, having a child will change that. Maybe
There's an interesting. I'm all for the clear bandages. If we can make clear bandages that work well, I would be for that. Which there are some.
Okay.
So your true color shines through, Dan. Your true color shines through.
I thought you were following that up with some problem about bandages that you knew about.
No, not really. No, I'm just just trying to make a joke. But
oh, okay, got it. Right. Yes. 48. I have no difficulty finding neighborhoods where people approve of our house.
I haven't lived in a lot of neighborhoods, and I never even went to my neighborhood before I went and served in. But I mean, no, the few places that I have lived, there are some people who've had issues with my household. Again, children. Children tend to walk really loudly, so I live on the second floor, and my neighbors have gotten used to it. But when they first moved in, it was definitely an issue, amongst other things. But yeah, children don't know how to step lightly.
No, they really don't. 49. My children are... Oh, and the answer for me is yes. I have no problem so far. 49. My children are given texts and classes which implicitly support our kind of family unit and do not turn them against my choice of domestic partnership.
Wait, what?
My children are given texts and classes which implicitly support our kind of family unit and do not turn them against my choice of domestic partnership.
Well, seeing as how we're homeschooled...
Right. For you, that's like easy... Yeah. And
they're instilled with values.
And for me,
they're not given anything. It's
okay. And for me, the answer would be, I'm sure that won't be a problem. And finally, number 50. Here's the end of the marathon. I will feel welcomed and quote normal in the usual walks of public life, institutional and social.
No.
Now is that because you're white? That's not because of my race.
Because of a lot of other things.
Okay.
A lot more because of my choices and also like who I am as a person. You know, I tend to think like just the mannerism and the way I think is different, and some people that tends to grate against. And I'm definitely not the normal person. There's definitely some animus that comes because I'm the person that tends to raise their hand when a question is asked, or that will. Anyway, that has more to do with the way I think than anything else.
Okay. So anyhow, you were talking. I wanted to circle back around to choosing to something not pay attention to race or something.
Yes. So to me, like I wanted. I like to. My goal is basically goal on race. Is basically Martin Luther King's dream that, you know, children can play together on the playground and, you know, I can go and be with people and not care about what their race is, care about the content of their character. And so to me, the only way that that's going to happen is if we stop looking so much at the race. Doesn't mean we ignore it completely. Doesn't mean that we, you know, look at the problems and don't address the issues, but we stop making it an issue when it's clearly not.
However, the fact we find as liberals is that for people who are minorities, race is exactly the issue. Things happening to black people that would never happen to white people, or things happening for and on the to the benefit of white people that would never happen for the benefit of black people. The person who was late to the meeting and is like, oh, that black person, they're running on colored person time, as black people have put it to me.
I've put it on I run on Mormon Standard Time.
What's Mormon Standard Time?
It's a running joke. Mormon Standard Time is pretty much all meetings and everything starts late.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's a running joke. It's mostly between Mormons, because unless you're around a bunch of Mormons, you're not going to really understand it. But yeah, we tend to run on Mormon Standard Time.
That's hilarious. I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
But in any case, when I hear a white person say, well, I don't think of race, my quiet answer sort of in my head is because you don't have to, because you get to just walk around and not have to deal with it. And that's what liberals think of as white privilege or any kind of privilege. Like, there's also certainly male privilege that I can walk around outside and not worry about being sexually assaulted or groped or catcalled.
Unless you're in a prison.
In jail.
No, I'm saying unless you're in a prison.
Oh.
Sorry, I'm just...
Okay.
Yeah.
But, like, for example, I can see the opposite of male privilege even as I walk. Random example, a couple of nights ago, I was walking back to my car from work, and there was a woman I was right behind, and we were stopped at a crosswalk, and I see it, but she takes just one quick look at me, and I sort of read that as, you know, this sort of very, you know, animal level, is this thing a threat to me or not? Because I get it. She was short, I was tall, I'm 6 feet tall and kind of big, and if I wanted to hurt her, I'm sure I could do it, unless she knew some sort of martial arts or whatnot. And so I make a really big effort to actually walk, you know, more slowly when I'm around women in a crowd. I don't want them to think I'm a threat, because I'm aware that, you know, I forget who wrote this, but some woman was writing about, and the way she put it was Schrodinger's rapist, because you never know who's going to be a threat to you. You just don't. I mean, you can make some guesses, but you don't know. So they don't know that I'm not that I would never do that. They don't know, and if they find out that I am, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that
this is part of the whole, like, content of character thing. Like, that has more to do with, you know, again, the content of your character than it has to do with, you know, the fact that you're a man or anything of that nature. I mean, it's, you know, it's people trying to make character judgment calls. And I think what I try to do in part of race is I would like that character judgment call to not come through race, is basically. And so when I say trying to ignore race, not saying that, like, you know, I can just ignore the fact that someone's black or someone's Asian or whatever, that sort of thing. It's that I try to, and that's my end goal.
Oh, sure, sure.
The race never comes into it, and my character judgment call comes from other, you know, other context clues and from actually discussing and talking with that person.
I'm not saying that you can't ignore the race of someone else if you really try hard enough. What I'm saying is that when you see an incident where a white cop shoots a black person, and maybe it really is about race. A lot of white people seem to me to have a tendency to say, why does everyone have to make everything all about race? That's what I'm getting at. Because it so often is exactly about race.
Yeah, I mean, so, maybe there is some, like, a hidden racial bias, but it is not a racial animus in the vast majority of cases. So I have some interesting statistics here. So justifiable homicide by a legal law enforcement officer is a track statistic. It's difficult to get, like, statistics on, like, all, like, cop shootings, for example. They don't compile those statistics very much, but, as an example, so half from 1976 to 1980, half of all homicide victims by a law enforcement officer were black. Now it's about 30%. From 2008 to 2012, it's about 30%. So that's gone down quite a bit. And you know, and a lot of these things. So it actually, in proportion to the amount of crime that's been committed by race, has actually remained somewhat constant. Percentages of crime committed by race has remained somewhat constant. But now we're actually well below, like, the justifiable law enforcement killings. Those numbers are actually down below the actual number of, murder arrests. 49% of murder arrests are from black people, 55% of robberies, and 34% of aggravated assaults. So 30% of justifiable homicide from 2008 to 2012, were black or African American. So if you look at that, it's actually below, like, the number of criminals and the people, like, the actual proportions of criminals. The people that are actually killed by law enforcement is actually lower. Of African Americans killed is lower than their percentage of actual committing of crime, which is an interesting take. Before, they were about even, you know, in the 1980s, they were about even. Now it's actually lower. 93% of all 47% of murder victims of between 1980 and 2008 were black, and 93% of those were from were killed by another black person.
Mm-hmm. So anyway,
in my mind, it's getting better. Is it perfect? No.
No. We have a lot of work to do, and I think what we want to do in part two is talk. So we've maybe, to a slight clumsy extent, framed the problem, and next week we want to talk about maybe some solutions. But in the meantime, you know, we knew this was going to be a two-part episode, and they also knew that we couldn't do it in a half hour in any case. But yes, so this was basically, I envisioned this as a problem-framing episode, and maybe a clumsy one at that. But our consensus is, I suppose that you should go through the world treating people as people, but aware that race is a thing, and that some things are going to happen because of race, and that that can be an injustice, and often is. How would you say for that is consensus?
Yeah, I can say that there are definitely some issues that are caused by race. Yeah.
Right. This is Until Part 2, the Jewish liberal from Cleveland signing off.
And this is the Mormon conservative from Seattle signing off.